Welcome to the Baila Room podcast. So today, my guest has a very interesting life path. She started to dance at the age of 4 in Cuba, lived in the US at the beginning of her adult life to finally move to Sainte-Sophie, Quebec. It's going to be very clear during our discussion that one of her goals is to educate people about the Cuban culture, and by doing so, that this will bring people closer to each other. During our discussion, you will definitely feel that she's very passionate. Because of COVID, we did our podcast outside next to a small stream. Also, there was a bit of construction mid-podcast, so I want to apologize ahead of time. So without further ado, please welcome Maylena Chaviano.
So professional.
Thank you very much. And also, I'll be monitoring the sound. So, is it your first podcast, Maylena?
I believe so.
First ever?
I've done interviews before, but not a podcast.
No?
No.
It's the first time?
Yes.
Fantastic.
I'm still with the old technology.
Here we go. So now you can hear maybe a creak in the back for those listening. It's there's a waterfall where we are. We're doing it outside. Oh, and we have an assistant here coming with water.
Fantastic. We have our personal assistant. Merci.
Thank you. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much. Thank you. This is when you're very famous, you get that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
Right? I don't have any personal assistant. Every time I ask for something, it doesn't come. I really want to have one. One day I'll be famous like you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yes. It's going to come.
So Maylena, how you been?
Well,
what's happening in your life right now?
Right. Oh, my gosh. I'm good. It's been a different year for sure.
Yeah.
I think for everybody. And, you know, when you had a plan like this year was supposed to be one thing and now everything is just on pause. But, you know, I'm good. I finally graduated from school at McGill. So that was a big step. And now I'm basically just planning. I'm building, just working here from home and just trying to build everything I can from when this whole thing goes by that I can be ready again.
What did you graduate? What's the deal in McGill?
Yes, it's international developments. So my idea is international developments focused in Latin America and in Caribbean countries.
Nice.
Yes.
And how did you get in? What was the deal? How long it took you?
Yes, it took me 4 years.
Nice.
I started here in 2016 and it's finished now. But I came from Boston. And I was studying there, and I transferred to McGill University. And, you know, it was a good place for me because it mixed my professional goal together with my personal life.
Nice.
My husband's here.
Here we go. That's good.
So that was easy to make a decision. But, you know, with all the challenges of moving again and being in a different country and le français ici.
Yes, sir. So for everybody here, it's she's living in Quebec, Sainte-Foy. So she went from, correct me if I'm wrong,
yes.
Cuba,
yes,
to United States,
yes,
to Sainte-Foy,
yes,
right. So let's roll it back a little bit. So
yes.
Cuba from zero to how many? Till what age were you when you left?
19.
19. Then from 19, you went to the States.
Yes.
So did you train in dance? What was the training from in Cuba? What was your vocation?
Yes, I've been dancing since I was 4 years old. Dance has always been part of my life. So I was just there and doing, you know, just school activities and taking dance classes as a child, and it just grew up on me. I started being more serious about it, and when the age came, I went to the art school in Havana. I spent there, I took all ballet, flamenco, everything, and that program is a very intense dance training program. It's a full-time career. In Cuba, dancing, being a musician, being a dancer, it's a profession. And you study for that. So that's what I did. I trained in the school there, and then when I finished, It was 19 years old, and it was the time for me to come to United States. It kind of just happened. Actually, I was 18. It kind of happened very fast, all of that. And then in the U.S., I continued. I started teaching dance classes where I was learning English. That was my very first dance teaching in the U.S. And I mean, it was wonderful. Just a very different, you know, perspective from the training that I'm used to back home versus what I see in the culture here. But other than that, I'm really grateful to be able to share, you know, what I learned back home and to continue my training. It's a different style, and I believe dancers, you never stop learning. There is always something to improve and to do better than what you did yesterday.
Nice. Just hold the mic without touching the wire. Try the holding. You see, just like this. Yes, or else we're going to hear. How are you going? just giving some technical tips. So from 0 to 19, when you were 4 years old, I guess your parents put you in dance, or you asked for it. Like, do you remember wanting to dance, or it's just like, okay, you're going to be a dancer?
Yes. No, I had no idea anything about dancing. I remembered what happened was that I was at school, and it came some professors, and they picked some students. It wasn't actually for dancing. It was for swimming, synchronized swimming.
Okay.
I never tell this part of my story because if you ask me right now if I know how to swim, the answer is no.
But they saw a synchronized swimmer in you.
But they saw a synchronized swimming on me. So they put me on school on the synchronized swimming. And I remember I was freaking out the first time. I was this little tiny girl. I mean, you see me. I'm not big, right?
6'4". 6'4", guys. Just so you imagine.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
6'4".
Yes.
Please.
So imagine at that age, she was like, "Whoa!" And they put me on the, you know, on the edge of the pool, and I remember looking down. I'm talking about the national pool where the professionals, they do diving from the up, way up there.
Yeah.
And you look, and I remember seeing that I couldn't see the bottom of the pool. I couldn't. It was completely dark. And from that day, I think like at that age and everything, I just got traumatized with the water and the pool and everything. There was no way I could have been on that water. I would cry. I would be like, get me out of here. They're going to throw me here. So I never made it as a swimmer, of course. But what that did to me is that it did create a foundation for dancing later on. So after that, it was when the first dance I did after that was in flamenco and then ballet. And I just continued slowly my training like that. And I never stopped. It wasn't 1 year that I took off from dancing. Like it was always that path. And it has been, well, until now that I did pause for dancing. But yes, no, it was synchronized swimming and then flamenco and then it was ballet. And I was able to perform in different parts of Cuba too, and even teaching there too right before I was leaving.
Nice. Thank you. It's okay. Because I hear it, you know, I hear it in my earphones. I want everybody, or else we're going to hear.
I need to make sure. We need to do this more. That's what it is.
No problem. I want to know, like, when you were picked to do a synchronized swimmer, so it just makes me think of like the communist ways.
Yes.
Like, let's just say it like that. You know, it's like, you're going to be a synchronized swimmer. You're going to be. So they picked the children very young,
yes.
Right? What in the world? They thought like you were going to be like, what they based it on? What they thought you would be a synchronized swimmer.
They thought I was going to be a synchronized
and
swimmer.
And then you're afraid of water.
Yes. I've always been a little rebel.
so they didn't know, like they figured it out. And then when they realized you were afraid of water, what did they do? Did they say, okay, let's put you in flamenco?
No, they basically, I mean, they always try to, at least they try their best. That you will keep on, like they wanted me to try. They wanted me to keep going. I mean, I stayed in that school for almost a year. I stayed there. It was a semester. Yes, at least a semester I stayed there. But imagine this. This is me. I'm 4 or 5 years old. This is not just synchronized swimming like it's an afternoon activity. This is a school. You go there in the morning. It was really far from my house. One mom the moms were rotating between all the children going there. So it was one mom taking all the little girls, taking them that day. They took that day off from work so that they could bring all the girls to that school. I had to get up at 5 a.m. in the morning at that age, go to the school, do my morning classes, then go to the swimming program in the same, like on the same type of building. Until the afternoon, I will come back to my house around 5 p.m. I wouldn't watch cartoons at that time or children programs or anything like that. Do my homework and then have some dinner, eat, and come back the next day again at 5 a.m. Like if I'm a full-time old employee, you know. It was very...
I'm tired of listening to
it. Yes, right. Imagine.
I'm just tired right now. Just listening to it. Now, was it... what are your souvenirs like? What's the deal? Do you felt good? Was it intense? What was the teaching like?
It was intense. This is not... you know, like I see here, people, they pad a lot. The children and even the adults, even when we're taking dance classes as an adult here, you know, we're always like, oh, let's make sure they're having fun. Oh, let's make, you know, where that is like, this is not about having fun. You're here to learn. Do you want to learn or, you know, what is it?
Yeah.
So it was definitely intense. I mean, I'm not saying like I never felt, you know, like pressured in the sense like, you know, like I'm feeling horrible here. I definitely do not want to be here. It wasn't like that. I was a child and I didn't want to be in the water. You know, that's what I have mostly in my head. And it was very intense, the exercises. Like, you know, to do the splits, to do all the workout, the physical workout, even if you know, if... I remember it was to do the split, the open center split. Like, they will literally push you all against the wall with their feet.
Yes.
And we're little girls, and we were all crying, and, you know, because that thing hurts.
Yeah, there's youth programs, and there's a couple of people going to be called here if that happens.
Yes. I mean, I don't think it's like that right now. I hope not, but it's definitely, it is intense, yes. This is not about partying little girls or anything, no.
Do you feel that, should I say that's the way to do it, to be good?
You know, on my philosophy, I don't think anybody, there is not a right way to do something. Like, I feel that's the misconception and what gets us all into trouble, you know, to try to push one way or the other. I think, you know, everybody has their own style of doing things and their own ways of teaching. And that's okay. The result at the end is what matters. And I think we should adapt to what's going on in that moment. Like, I'm not going to teach Juan, for example, the same way as Maria if they are both two completely different that are going to learn in a two different style. You know?
Well, that's how you feel right now. But
yes.
I don't think your teachers back then felt that way.
No, for sure. No, for sure.
It's just I was always wondering, like, I have this teaching philosophy where I think the amount of pressure you put on somebody,
yes,
will just might switch his relationship to the art,
yes,
you're trying to teach.
Yes.
I think, I'm not sure about result. I think, for example, I would like to do a test, if ever that's possible. You know, you take a group of people and you say, you pat them. You just go, you're good. You know, you're just giving positivity, like just positive reinforcement all the time. You know, you don't do any kind of punishment and you just go through the paces with that group for a year. Then you take another group and you go rampage on them. You just go, yeah, you don't do this correctly. Come on. You can, and you put a lot of pressure on them. And then you try to take some measurements. I don't know what kind of measurements we want to take. Like, I don't know, can they do a better split, for example, right? And see which method would create the results physically that we can see. And then also we could interview the people, see how happy they are in their lives.
Yes.
I really wonder that, because I'm not sure if you get better results by,
yes,
being intense or being, let's call this critical or mean or whatever with people. I don't think so. Like, but like you said, it depends probably what you measure, right? Yes. If you measure gold medals,
yes.
Right? If the only measurement is how many the gold medals these guys won, then that's one type of measurement. But then you talk to these people. Are they happy people? Like, are they okay? Or do they love what they do? I don't know how much of that you're going to get, you know?
Yes.
I'm not sure. It's yes. a different, like, I'm not saying that, like, all the culture and the heritage of the, let's say, the communist ways, mm-hmm. which I always thought that was a bit intense.
Yes.
And just to put it in context, I'm half Russian. So I kind of have stories of, with,
yes.
You know, my mother told me stories of how yes. people were educated back then. I'm just not sure. I don't think it's good.
Yes.
I don't know how you feel about it. You said, like, I agree about the adaptation part,
yes.
where a teacher should adapt, but that's next level.
Yes. Yeah,
no?
Yeah. That's
actually yeah. giving a proper service by analyzing the student.
Yes.
Like, you analyze the student, say, guys, I think he needs a little more tough love.
Yes.
I think he needs a little candy right now, you
yes.
know?
Yes, yeah.
How do you take this?
To be honest with you, I don't think there is a system that has figured this out. Not communism, not capitalism either. I agree that it's very intense either. But I also think there needs to be this kind of, you know, I don't know, like middle way or like a balanced thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Like I see a lot here, you know, for I don't know, like children getting prices when or you know or
they lost they when, get prices yes, where they lose
because they lose exactly
yeah that's true it's ridiculous
yeah so that to me is something that you know that I don't think is going to be helpful on the long run for these children. I also don't think the way back home is the right way either, but the point that I'm trying to make is that no one from the outside should be the one judging or criticizing how people in their own territory decide how to do their own things.
Mm-hmm.
Only those people who are being the one influenced by that system. And I know we're talking about dancing and we're also going, you know, it's dancing, but it's in general that,
yes.
that this is something that I see a lot. Don't you think
yes. that people that are in it don't have the capacity to have an outside look? Like, you have a very particular situation.
Yes.
You went to three countries.
Yes.
You saw three different ways.
Yes.
You have the possibility to say, okay, this is not like in Cuba. This is
yes.
this is like not in the States. This Canada and blah, 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 blah. So you have the, I don't want to say luxury without being, like, you have the ability to judge and to see from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But if people are in Cuba
yes.
and they always knew whatever they saw,
yes.
could they be critical of it?
I understand what you're saying. That's a really good point. Yes. And I think the way, I'm going to give you the specific example, the relationship, Cuba-US relationship, mm-hmm. right? Ever since I remembered, there has been tensions between these two countries. And it has been specifically because the U.S. has been trying to influence their ways of doing things with Cuba. I'm not saying the way that Cuba is doing things is good or is bad or is the right
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is stay the hell out, you
yeah.
know? Like don't get involved. You don't need to. Who are you to try to change and to influence another nations? Where is the right of sovereignty that you are so proud about? And that, you know, because they wouldn't want anyone coming to their house and telling them how to do things,
well
even
said.
If their house is messed up.
Yeah, well said. I completely agree.
You know, so that is, I guess, my overall point. Like, it is not about saying Cuba, the system, is doing right or is doing wrong. Hey, there are a lot of things that the U.S. tell Cuba they need to change, and I completely agree with those things. But what I'm saying is that no one from outside should be the one telling them that they need to change and how they need to change and how it is that they need to do things.
100%.
You know, that even if I agree with the things that they, you know, that this is the point that, okay, yeah, you should not be doing these things now in 2020. You know, like, that's it. Get it over with.
Now, have you ever yeah. said that to somebody in the States when you were living there? Because I'm pretty sure somebody said something at some point.
Oh, my God, yes. I always said, you know, I'm in this position where if I'm in Cuba and then I'm going to criticize Cuba, then Cuba, the government specifically, will not agree with my views, with what I'm trying to say. And then if I'm the U.S. and I'm talking with the U.S. government, they also won't agree with the views that I have and how I need to do things. So I'm in Canada now.
Now you can blast both countries from afar.
No, I mean, I love my country. I love Cuba.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful place, and that goes beyond politics and beyond the government. And that is something that I've always wanted to share to people. Ever since I moved to the U.S., I realized the misconception and the misunderstanding that it exists even today about the country of Cuba. Mm. I'll give you some example. When I first moved, and whenever people will tell me, where are you from? Because, I mean, I have an accent. I have this beautiful Caribbean accent.
It.
Thank
love
you.
It. Love the accent. Love the accent. Keep it going.
Thank you.
Never change.
No, I don't think
it's going to be boring. If you take this accent from here, just keep going with that accent. It's lovely. I'm serious. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, whenever I will say, no, I'm from Cuba, their first question was, how's Fidel Castro? Like that.
Wow.
And I'm like, imagine you go into a country and that people will ask you, how's the president of your country doing? You know, it's very... And the other thing is that they will tell me, and this really blew my mind, and is that, but I thought everyone in Cuba was black by your light skin color.
That's interesting.
Like that. And I'm like, where have you been all this time? You know, like, and just getting that kind of reaction. I'm talking about the United States. Getting that kind of reaction made me realize that they don't know Cuba. They don't know it. They know, I mean, some people do. Some people have traveled there. Some people have read the story, the history or something, but the general public, or at least the people that I've interacted with, there is a lot of uneducation, and they only see what the media portrays, what the government portrays about Cuba. And this really inspired me to want to do more. I see dancing as a way for me to share my culture. As a way for me to explain, to educate. And of course, the trips that I do is the most that I'm able to really, because now I'm bringing people here. This is not, you're not reading anything on the newspaper. You're now here, so you can now see for yourself Cuba, beyond politics, beyond the government, beyond communism and all these issues. You're seeing the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's really, really cool. Can you tell me about how do you go about the trips for everybody to know? If everybody wants to try out one of your trips. Right now it's a bit difficult,
yes,
right?
Yes, if everyone wants to try out, they
can
need
I say,
to wait.
Can I say fucking COVID?
Yes.
Can
please.
I swear on this podcast? Yes, because it's mine. the joy of doing things on your own. All right, so... Can you tell me a bit about how the trips go? So if anybody's curious, or at some point people are going to want to travel again,
yes.
What's the setup?
Well, I mean, for now, I'm passing. But the main thing is we have company.
Here we go. We're outside. Huh? So because of COVID, we're outside again. And we're enjoying now some animals are visiting us. Little squirrel here.
This is Lola.
A Lola? Oh, she has a name.
Yes, we have Lola and we have Ramon.
Ramon.
Yes, Ramon.
They're Cuban.
Yes.
Cuban squirrels here in Quebec.
Yes.
Fantastic. All righty. So let's get back to your traveling, your trip. How do you organize it? What can people expect?
Well, as of right now... Mm-hmm. Changes are going to happen, but I mean, the best way for people to go and read about it is going to the website. It's cubaimmersion.com.
Beautiful.
Yes. But basically, the idea is to create an immersive, cultural, and dance trip where I'm able to mix you know, my passions in one platform.
Yeah.
So we continue to do our dance training. That's why, you know, I target a lot. I started and I continue to work with my own students. And then my students have told their friends. And that's how, you know, slowly I've made already 10 trips.
Nice.
That we have done, and I'm really happy and I'm really excited. It's you do dance classes in the morning. In the afternoon, we do a cultural or an educational activity, and then at night we do either social dancing performances. We watch a live concert, but the main idea is for people to feel they are immersed in the Cuba culture, in the Cuba street, in the Cuba. This is not about tourism. We don't stay in hotels. We're not going to, you know, discover the building built in the whatever. This is about, we can do that. And we do part of that. But the main idea is for us to live within the Cuban people. So we stayed in a neighborhood. It's a regular neighborhood. It's a fisherman town where we stay.
That's cool.
And then the neighbors interact with us and we with them. And, you know, we play together. We do activities together. And by the end of the trip is for you to know when you arrived, you had this perception, you were like this. And now at the end of the trip, you know, what was the transformation? What happened? And honestly, I've been really blessed to be able to do that. It's a challenge for sure. But what keeps me going is to see the reaction in the people. There is a positive outcome between the participants who come and the locals, the Cubans in there too. I've had people telling me, Maylena, this has been the best night of my life. I've never been on the beach before. This was my first time going on the water. You know, like things like, I don't think I can ever be the same person as I was before I came here.
That's cool.
And I got people calling me, telling me, Maylena, I'm playing the claves now in my backyard. When have I ever done that? You know, like things like that. And that really, it means a lot. And also the impact that we can have with this program for the Cuban, for the locals there. I mean, I don't work with a middle agency. I don't work with any government agency or anything like that, because I'm Cuban myself. I'm able to hire the dance instructors directly, the houses where we stay directly. So this is the money that you give me coming to me. It goes to them directly versus going to an agency that's giving them a salary or something like that. So, and you can see the impact and the difference that this is making for them. Just in their way of making their own living through what they love doing, through art, through being an entrepreneur. And that's what the program is about. We're helping local entrepreneurs in Cuba.
What I find fantastic is a lot of times people will spend a lot of energy criticizing. Mm-hmm. And I think you are doing something to bridge and to bring along people in your culture. And I really have a tremendous respect for you.
Thank you.
For doing that, honestly. Because you can say this and that, you can criticize the government, you can spend that,
yes.
It doesn't work, you can go through agencies,
yes.
You go say, fuck that shit, I'm
yes.
doing it on my own.
Yes.
And the first time you did it, when did you, what was the challenges when you started?
I was so scared. I'm still are.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. I mean, I always said, I'm not selling shoes, you know. I'm bringing human beings to another country. And I it's a huge responsibility. One is because I'm dealing with people like that in internet. We're having to do flights, visas. Everything can go wrong. Anything can go wrong. It's absolutely so many challenges. But especially because the country that I'm working with, Cuba, gives me so much more of that higher level of challenging. Like you...
Tell me about it. What kind of challenges, what kind of trouble you run into?
Okay, I'll tell you about it.
Go.
For example, on one of my first trips, we made a reservation. Over there, they don't know. You know over here how you can make a reservation online? You call, yes, sure, no problem. That doesn't work over there. You have to go in person. Imagine for every place you want to go, you have to go in person, talk to that person. And then when you arrive, it doesn't mean that the things you reserved are going to be there. You never know. You might arrive and the whole thing just is closed. They're supposed to sell water. Now that we ran out of water. Mm-hmm. Power went off. You know, things like that can happen. One day we reserved a table for the group. And sure, we arrived. The table was there. But the chairs weren't there. So it's like, where are the people going to sit? You know, things like that. My driver was coming one time on the bus to pick up my group. And then at that same moment, the city was cutting the tree in the middle of the road. And my driver was like, Mylena, I feel like I can fly right now. It's like, you know, things like that can happen. The plane can be delayed. And now the whole thing, you know, it's just so many different things. But to me, the most challenge is actually the political tension that there is between, I'm dealing with these two countries that doesn't get along. And right now, even me trying to collect payments from people, the U.S. government just said, no, there is no bank. I can't even send money to my family right now. In this year, when this whole thing has been, you know, we're in the middle of this global crisis right now, the U.S. government has not stopped putting different sanctions against Cuba.
Like started?
Every month there is a different thing. Hmm. Every month they
Why? What's the history behind that? If you can school people that are listening.
Sure. Why,
go ahead. What do you know about this?
So, I mean, the history comes. I'm going to try to not go all the way back there, but really everything started. Cuba was first a colony of Spain. Mm-hmm. The U.S. came and intervened on Cuba's favor for Cuba to become independent of Spain, right? The Cuban independence, I'm talking that it started in 1868, mm-hmm. October 10th. Okay, I won't be that specific.
Yeah, yeah. That's fine. That's fine. It's amazing. No, keep going.
So they started like that. The U.S. intervened, and they were helping Cuba to become independent. We won. Cuba became independent of Spain. But what happened was that they didn't really become independent because now Spain gave Cuba to United States. So now we became colony of the United States. Mm. And that was the first issue that happened because Cuba obviously felt betrayed, like you were here helping us to be independent, and now you're actually taking over us. Mm. So that continued. We continued to be a colony of United States until 1959 when Fidel Castro won the revolution. Now, people always talk about dictatorship and communism, and they always talk about Cuba post-Fidel Castro, so post the revolution after 1959, but they don't talk before that. You know, like, why did we need a revolution? Why? Because if people were happy, none of this would have happened, mm. right? But the issue was that the president that we had, Batista, before 1959, he was doing really badly for the people there. He was, I mean, I can tell you a personal story. My grandmother's brother, he was killed on the middle of the street by his policeman just because he was in the wrong place in the wrong time. He wasn't part of the revolution. He wasn't anything. He was just in the street. But the security there was so, it was so unsafe to just be walking in Cuba. You couldn't just be walking on the street. You can't get killed just by standing there. So they did a shooting, and my grandmother's brother was at that moment there. My great-grandfather was the one who had to go and uncover his son to recognize that was him. Stories like that happened almost every day while Batista was the president in Cuba. The gap of inequality was crazy. The criminal actions. Cuba, Havana, was the spot for the mafia, for all the criminal things was going on. Everything that was out there, it was happening in Havana. So, and this president was the one allowing all of that. Thousands of Cubans died. So Fidel came, and he was like, no, we need to do a revolution. Honestly, at that time in history, we needed that. The best thing that happened to Cuba was that revolution. And whoever wants to be against me and wants to hate me, go ahead. But I am in favor of that revolution that happened because it was the best thing that at that moment in time Cuba needed, because people were dying on a daily basis. Mm. And then after that, everything was great. I mean, my grandparents, they know how to read and write because of this revolution happened. They were part of this alphabetization program that Fidel created, that they said everybody needs to learn how to read and write. So we were from a very poor, family, and they didn't have the education or the means to improve. So thanks to that, they were able to get a better education and at least to learn how to read and how to write.
I was extremely surprised at that. When I went to Cuba at some point, I just did the hotel things. I know mm-hmm. I know what you think about the hotels and stuff like that a little bit, because you said at some point, I read an interview, said the best way to know Cuba is not to stay in a hotel. You actually
yes.
said that.
Yes.
So I did some research, Mylena, okay, so I don't look stupid. So I remember going out of the hotel at some point, mm-hmm. and sorry guys, there's like construction at the same time. So if you hear some noises, I apologize ahead of time. So, I remember going out of the hotels. I'm on this motorcycle, and I remember every time I was asked something to somebody, just can we go and do local things? They felt uncomfortable. Mm. I saw that, and they pointed back at the hotel because yes. they saw the bracelet.
Yes.
First of all, I wondered why. I never got a straight answer. And then I was basically, a family on the side of the road said, come over. So we went there and we chatted with the family with my mm-hmm. whatever Spanish I can muster. And I realized that everybody that kind of lived on the farm, it felt like a little farm, mm-hmm. everybody had a master's degree. Hmm. And I'm like, man, people are like full on educated here. It's like, yes. what's the deal, right? So I was surprised at that. So first, what do you think why people were pointing back at the hotel and felt
yes.
comfortable?
Yes.
Why?
Because they're not allowed to.
Ah, not allowed.
Yes.
Communism in
yes.
action. Okay, so not allowed to chat with tourists?
It's complicated.
Tell me about it. What's the deal?
So the deal is that, so if you are a tourist and you are in Cuba, it's not like you can't talk to Cubans, you know. But the issue is that Cubans can get into trouble. So, like, you wouldn't get into trouble as a tourist. Mm-hmm. But if the police comes and sees this Cuban talking to a tourist, he can get into trouble, the Cuban, because the police might think that he is working without having a license in the tourism industry. So, like, he can be, like, he's coming to you, guiding you around, but you're not a tour guide. Why are you guiding these tourists around? Mm. Why are you taking him to your house, for example, showing him the local things, when, first of all, the government might not want you to do that because now you're going to be seeing some real realities about the Cuban daily lives that you wouldn't see from your hotel room, you know? So then this Cuban can get into trouble. And also because at the end of the day, maybe you want to tip this Cuban for doing the favor of showing you around or something. But then why is he getting paid when, again, he doesn't have a license to do that? And two, we're all supposed to be equal. So we're all supposed to have the same salary that I'm the government giving you. Why are you getting more when your neighbor can't? So in reality is that they're not allowed to do that. They still do it because when you don't have another choice, what are you going to do? You're always going to risk, you know, if you can't live with what the government can give you on the monthly basis, but you still need to eat.
Yeah.
Then, you know, this is what I mean. Like the black market exists in Cuba and it's a byproduct of the situation that it is. No one wants to do illegal things. No one wants to do, you know, under the table thing. No one in Cuba wants to be living in that kind of stress. But when you are not allowed to live in your full potential, what other choice do you have?
I completely agree. Yeah.
And that's why when I bring people or when I see tourists going there and I'm like, and you're gonna buy a souvenir from someone, it's like don't try to get a better price from this person. You know, it's their painting. Buy their painting, the price they're giving you, because, you know, you don't know what's going on behind this person. And really, they don't understand how much you're supporting. Sometimes we feel so good about bargaining and, oh, the price was 30 and I got it for 20. You know, it's like, so what?
Yeah.
You know, who cares? Just give the teddy.
Yeah.
Give more if you can, you know,
I
like,
agree.
And I hope that when I'm speaking like this, I'm not making Cuba look, I don't mean to sound bad. I don't want to criticize. I don't want to, you know, I love my country. I'm just not blind of the truth and of their reality. And I don't want to be one more negative voice about Cuba that exists everywhere.
It doesn't sound negative at all. At all.
You.
I think you're very emotional about it. It comes across very well.
Thank you. Because that's what I always see, especially my beautiful brothers and sisters from the Cuban, Cuban Miami community is... It's always so on this mind about Cuba, and is completely criticizing and doing things. When you support things like the embargo, when you support things like sanction, you're not hating the government, you're hating the people, and that is why I can never stand on the favor of this kind of Cuban community, even though I agree with a lot of the things that they want to be changed in Cuba. I do too. I just don't think the strategy that they're using is the right one. And it's the one that we should be using.
Now, they were already on the embargo,
yes.
Right? Already hurting Cuban people. And now the COVID on top of it.
Yes.
What do you know? Or I think you're in contact with some people over
yes.
there. How is their everyday life?
It's not good.
What does it look like?
I mean... you say that like, I have contact with the people there. I still have my mom there. Mm. I have my families there. I have contact with Cuba every day, several times a day. So this is the COVID. Cuba has been doing great about handling the COVID situation.
Mm-hmm.
They went back. They were able to put it to zero, like zero cases. But now, you know, like in other countries that things are getting back to, you know, to increase again with the COVID cases. So Cuba is now dealing on their second time trying to deal again with the whole COVID situation.
Yeah.
However, health-wise, they are doing good. Resources, basic resources, food, electricity, that's not good. There has been ships coming, trying to arrive to Cuba with oil and with food, and it has been intervened by the U.S. government, and those supplies have not been able to arrive to Cuba.
Mm.
Right now, they are struggling with food. People do not have enough food in Cuba, and that is the reality. There is not enough production. 70% of the basic needs in Cuba is imported. And if those things cannot be imported, they cannot live with only trying to produce not even 30% of the things they need. There is just no way. So it is a need. It is an immediate need right now for the people there to be able to receive just basic needs. The electricity, at least 2 hours a day in every work and in the houses, they have to stop the power because they're running out of oil. So that is happening right now, that the electricity needs to be shut down for at least a couple of hours every day. And it's going to continue to increase because they don't have enough oil supply.
Mm.
The best Cubans that are there, and people think, no, this is the privileged Cuban, is because they have families like me who are outside and we can send money to their family. So Cuba now, they created a new store that you can only pay with a card with U.S. money. That has created a lot of conflicts. But anyways, my point for that is that now because Cuba did that, the Trump administration stopped the bank that was sending that money to Cuba. So now I cannot send or create this card that my family needs to buy this food in the store. I cannot do that.
Mm.
It stopped.
But why United States? You're in Canada now. Isn't there a bypass? Are we shaking hands with the states on that subject? Like,
you know,
are we making things as complicated to send money at Cuba?
Well, Canada is, they confuse me sometimes because Cuba and Canada have a good relationship. However, sometimes they do kind of go a little bit on the side with the U.S. because they are, their excuse is that Cuba is using that money with the whole Venezuela situation and all that. And it's like encouraging, you know, another dictatorship system like Venezuela. Mm. That's their excuse. But to me, it's like, this is the excuse now. We've been dealing with this since 1960. You know, it's always been a different excuse as to why you're going to provide sanctions and you're going to give an embargo and you're going to, you know, it's like there is always an excuse for them. But at the end of the day, what I want them to see, and I'm sure they know that, is that they're trying to hurt the government, but it's the people, the one who's being affected. The government's still there.
Yeah.
They're still with their system. They're not going to back down. And it's us, it's my family, it's my friends, the ones who are struggling trying to get food.
It's so sad.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I depress you?
Not at all. Not at all. It's very touching. It's very sad that it ends up being like that, and that there's no, I don't know, peaceful resolution. If you're at that point where you're stopping ships with food,
yes,
you're basically creating famine.
Yes.
Like you're literally starving people.
Yes.
That's what it's happening, no?
Yes. Yes. And in the middle of all this global crisis that every country is struggling,
yeah,
then you're adding even more tension and even more pressure. And this is why, as much as I disagree with a lot of the things in Cuba, I cannot support the U.S. ways of making that change.
Mm.
Because, no, it's just... At the same time, it's what inspires me to keep doing what I do. You know, whenever I have a chance to educate, to explain, I try to, and even when you come to Cuba with me, I'm not talking about my ways or my perspective. I want you to see it on your own. People have their own eyes. I don't tell you, look, this street has holes. I don't have to tell you that. You are seeing that, you know? Or look, there is a new building here. I don't have to tell you that. You can see that from your own eyes. So I'm not there just to, you know, to tell you this is what it should be or shouldn't be. I'm just there to put you in the place where you can judge for yourself without anyone interfering by you reading a news article from a biased perspective.
I completely agree that's the way to do it. And also when you travel and you live with the people and you see it that way, whatever preconception you have, whatever hatred you would have, it's very hard to hold on to.
Yeah.
So it's amazing what you do.
Yeah.
We should get back on a plane.
I agree. Yes, I can't wait for that.
I was wondering, on a lighter note, I was thinking, that's my explanation, but I'm not sure if I'm correct. I know there, like, we're going to talk about salsa because we have that in common, salsa dancing. And I know... when people are asking me what kind of salsa we dance or we teach, I always say it's the New York salsa because the most influence that we received here in Montreal City came from New York, because about 15, 20 years ago when I started to dance, these are the guys I were watching, and the training that the little training I got in New York, well, that I kept, you know, and we develop it. And here we just dance on a different rhythm, which is the on one for those who know salsa. And in New York, they dance on two. And then there's the West Coast, which is L.A. and all these another kind of style of salsa. There's like Miami, where there's a little bit of rueda. And because there was Cuban came there and threw a party. I'm oversimplifying you. You're gonna correct me. And then I was wondering always, why did Cuba retained such a visual, specific salsa dance? We have the evolution of the Afro dances that influenced that dance. But I think, and correct me, that the embargo has to do with it. The isolation of that island for years, like 10, 20, 30, 40 years, created a very specific way of dancing that you can literally recognize if you watch. If you see somebody from L.A., New York, and Cuba, from L.A., New York, they kind of, they breathe the same. Like, it's kind of the same. But the Cubans are out there. Like, it's completely different style, yes. right? Is this correct?
Yes.
Did I say stuff that is wrong? what is your interpretation of that? Because you're way more in there than me, right? You saw it all. That's my take. What's your take?
Yes. No, I like how you the whole, you know, summarized.
Yes, but it's very caricature. So please, can you go in depth?
No, definitely Cuba has its own, you know, style, and even the New York style and the LA style, we cannot forget that is based off what we learned in Cuba too, mm-hmm. coming from Africa. And, you know, okay, I'm not going to get into controversial now with
please
that.
Do. Come on, please do. This is, we can relax, we're outside. We like controversy. What? Go.
Oh, so many people are going to hate me after
yeah, exactly. Who's this Milena chick?
Yes.
What's this all about?
No, okay. So, because, you know, there is a new, I'm going to go and answer to your question, mm-hmm. but I don't want to forget, because this is something I've been wanting to talk about with the dance industry, too.
Yes.
And it is this new trend about people calling Afrofusion, Afro-Mambo, Afro-Caribbean, Afro-something else.
Yes.
It's Afro-Cuban. Mm. And what I mean by that is that, and I don't want to be, is Cuban, it is African. It comes from Africa. If you go to Cuba and you start asking the experts about Afro-Cuban, they're going to be the one telling you, this is not Afro-Cuba, this is Africa. What we know is from there, right? But my point is that Cuba has been this country that because of isolation or whatever, it has not been, I feel a lot of the time, it has not received the proper recognition when it deserves it. Mm. And salsa is part of that. And I'm sorry, those of you who are gonna know, who won't like what I have to say, but, you know, if you are going to be, if you say Afro-Caribbean, and you're truly doing an Afro-Caribbean, I'm okay with that. Do it. Afro-Mexican, do it. That exists. But if you're going to be doing Elegua steps, and you're going to be playing the Elegua toque, you are teaching Afro-Cuban, because that Elegua that you are teaching with those steps are different than the one that is in Nigeria, where this whole thing comes from. It's different than even the one from Brazil. So by you doing a Yemaya step with the Yemaya toque, and you're calling it Afro-Caribbean when you're actually doing Afro-Cuban, you are not, you're using this kind of new trend that is not properly being placed. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, explain first for listeners what Elegua, Yemaye, all that stuff.
Yeah, so these are orichas.
Orichas is?
Orichas are, they're like semi-gods. And when we are dancing, and this is specifically from the area of Yoruba. So this is from the Yoruba tribe. It's part of the Yoruba religion. And it is just more than stepping, or it is just more than doing a move, you know. When you are doing an Elegua step, you are representing this oricha. It is not now Milena dancing. It is now me representing Elegua in that case.
Yeah.
Right?
It took me a while to understand that.
Yes.
Because I always ask the teacher, goes, who is this god? What is
yes.
he doing? I wanted to know.
Yes.
Because I felt ridiculous
yes.
or not. Like, if you're just doing the steps, I felt like empty.
Yes.
So I was saying, well, what is he doing? And I had two good teachers that kept telling me that this is the one that clears the path for the other
yes.
gods and stuff like that. So when you dance, you do the action of clearing the path, and then
yes.
makes sense,
yes.
right? So you get a grasp, a little window to the cultural or the religion of that dance, right? Because
yes.
it is part religion, right?
Yes.
And it is part dance, but
yes.
it's not a religion. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
It's not a religion.
You're right.
But when you say demigod, you invoke religion.
You invoke religion,
okay,
yes.
So are people have strong beliefs? Do they believe in these people?
Yes.
Or they just think it's just a dance? Yeah. What's the deal?
It depends. If it is part of your religion, if it is part of your own religion, then yes, that religion exists. And it exists in Cuba, and it exists in Brazil, and it still exists in Nigeria and in many places.
Yeah.
In Haiti, so that exists. If that's your religion, okay. In my case, that is not my religion. It was never my religion, but it is part of my culture. So I learned it as a dancer. I learned it as a history too. And I can tell you this, the gap, like when the students come to me and they ask me, Maylena, I want to learn, like, I need to have this more, you know, like organic dance when my style or when I'm dancing salsa, like I feel this, you know, this natural that is missing, right? Like this natural way of dancing. And I believe, and I always tell, when you learn that disconnection between salsa and Afro-Cuban dances is what the dance community is missing right now. And I really feel like that gap, I would love to see that gap getting more closer together. Because even though, like, if you're dancing en legua, I mean, the whole isolation that you need to have and coordination in each part of your body, it really influences your own style of dance in a good, positive way. So it is a religion, if that's your religion, you know. But it is not my religion. And when I'm teaching it, I'm not teaching it with the religion perspective. I'm teaching it as a dancer perspective. It is a dance.
Yeah. I think it was something that struck me when I went, the first time I went to a congress in LA, I was just a plain old salsa dancer, nothing more. I thought I was really good. I was in Montreal. I like to tell the story because the first time I went to the congress, there was no videos, no YouTube. I thought I was the bomb.
Yes.
I was so good. And then I realized that I'm the bottom of the food chain. I suck. These are all the amazing people. And I remember when Tropical Gem has a very funky kind of way, like Fernando Sosa, he has a bit of salsa with a mixture of Afro and a mixture of hip hop. And I remember that I could see the hip hop in his body, like the tightness of some movement.
Yes.
So he had the Afro, but it was very tight. And I remember like, wow, this is amazing. This is it. And then when I came back to Montreal, I knew where the training was.
Yeah.
I go, I got to take ballet at what? I was 35 years old in a class of ballet. That was the funniest sight. You know, look at the guy, you know. And then I took Afro with all the teachers that I could here and there, like sessions and sometimes privates and stuff like that. Do not consider myself an Afro dancer at all. But I remember just seeing physically and historically the connection with salsa. And I knew it back then, 15 years ago, I knew that that's where it should be. And I kept asking questions and blah, 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 and try to infuse because I felt that's the gap that was missing from the very, I want to learn moves and just do moves to actually embody what you hear in the clave, what you hear in the congas.
Yes.
And then it felt really good. And then it felt that I kind of did service to the music. And so I agree with you 100% that everybody should do it. Everybody
Thank
should
you.
Do it. Everybody.
Yes.
Like everybody that's serious about dancing salsa
yes.
should go and get schooled in Afro-Cuban ways.
Yeah.
And understanding the rhythm and stuff like that. If you want to push it further, because I don't think it's about moves. You know, some people, like I understand when you evolve as, let's say as a guy, you want vocabulary and you feel like the guy's always thinking, oh, I don't know any of moves and they want to learn moves. And I tell them, sure, you know, learn moves.
Yes.
But moves are just moves.
Yes.
You know, you can dance with a crossbody lead and right turn 5 minutes with a good dancer.
Yes.
That knows and listens to the music.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody should, if you're serious about it. And they should learn it, not just the steps. So that's another thing when we're teaching a class. And you see me teaching this before, too.
Yeah.
How I just don't teach the steps. I'm explaining the movement, the story behind it.
It's
what
very
does
important.
It mean?
Yeah.
What does it mean what we're doing?
Yeah.
It makes a difference. Afro-Cuban, it is not just steps. You know, it goes beyond that. It's a culture.
100%. You sit people against the wall and you push them until they acquire the split.
I learned that go, from
COVID. Get in the fucking split. You get it.
Don't you cry.
But I remember, I don't know if you're like that, but I remember I have a very good Cuban friend, Lejangel Chavez, that you probably heard or know. He He's the sweetest guy. Fun-loving. We have parties. We're like his city. And then I took some lessons with him and he became a monster. Like, what happened to my friend? You know? He's like, you do this. Boom. And he's poking me in the back and he's pushing me around to get the steps. I'm thrown everywhere. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I accept it from him.
Yes.
That's intense. Yes. He's like, he changed. Yes. Are you like that? Do you become the strict? No, you're still hi, guys.
It depends.
Do you turn beast? You have it in you, I'm sure. I'm sure it's back there. You know, you were traumatized when you're 5 years old. You're like, get the steps.
You know, I think it depends. When I'm teaching someone who's now learning for their first time Afro-Cuban, let's say if I'm going to go to your school and I'm teaching your students, I'm going to try not to become that beast.
Okay, you resist, huh? It's hard, huh? Yes. You want to, huh? Get the fucking step.
But if I'm training someone...
Dancers.
Dancers. Dance teachers.
Yeah.
No, yeah, for sure. It's like...
Well, why go there? That's my question. We go back to the original question. Can you just be nice?
Can you just be nice?
No? You can say, do the step, but hey, not bad, you know?
You know, I can try. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't think it's something that... It just comes out naturally. Something that, you know, maybe...
It's your roots.
It's on the root, roots. I don't think I'm like a beast when I'm teaching. It's just...
Do you lose the smile?
I don't think so.
That's funny as heck, man. That's funny as heck.
Oh, my God, Elias.
Jesus. Huh?
This little girl becomes...
Oh, yeah. No, I can picture you. I don't know if I saw you once doing it. I think you became like you meant business.
Yeah.
Like you meant business. These guys are dancers. They should know. Let's do this, you know. I think you meant business, which is fine. You know, it's fine. But I think that people here in Canada, they're not used to this.
No, they're so nice and sweet. I love it. Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're not used to this. You have to warn them. Like you have to prepare. Like you say, listen, we're getting this Cuban girl. She's 6'4". Very nice, lovely smile. But as soon as the class starts, please welcome the beast. Yeah, get this step.
oh
boy.
My God. Huh? Yeah. Yes. No, we'll see. It depends.
Yeah. Well, so you adapt.
Yes, I adapt.
You adapt. Here you go. You kind of size the dancers. And you probably say to yourself, they can take some heat.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You know, I always picture those ballet dancers. Those girls, they get beaten, man. But
they
not
do.
Beaten in
yeah,
a literal
but
sense.
Yes.
But they get through. By 20 years old, their body is in shambles.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
They're required to do, let's say, unhuman. Like, that's why when you look them on stage, it just look light and very feathery and stuff. But they went through hell.
Yes.
Right? They,
yes.
They paid the price for to get these kind
yeah,
of skills.
Absolutely. So I definitely encourage people, the more you can train in Afro-Cuban, do it. And in the dance professionals, so like the instructors specifically, and I want to clarify, like when they say Afro something else, I don't blame them for doing that.
It just sounds cool.
Right?
Yeah, it just sounds cool.
Afro something else.
No, it just sounds cool. That's why they use it. It's like a pitch, you know. It's like a marketing.
It could, yeah,
right?
It could be. On my experience, it is because of the Afro-Cuban instructors' faults that they've been felt the need to not use the Cuban name.
Mm.
And I can say I'm part of it. We criticize. Imagine... Cubans dance instructors, we went through hell learning and training years trying to get this Afro-Cuban dance right. And we still feel we don't have it. We still feel we still need to keep learning on a daily basis and our training is not done. So now we come and we see some instructors because their name internationally is well known or something.
Mm-hmm.
That they took some classes, an Afro-Cuban classes. A few classes, I don't know. And now they come and they teach this, just like that. And now you are seeing, this is not right. This is not the right technique. This is not the right steps. This is not how it is. And then the Cuban instructors, you know, we feel kind of like appropriate, like they're, you know, like this is not, this is my culture and you are sharing it wrong, you know.
Yeah, I understand.
But we have acted wrong, and now I'm criticizing us Cuba instructors. What we need to do is not criticize them for doing something wrong. It's understand, one, there is not a lot of way to learn proper Afro-Cuban classes.
I agree.
Right now, there is just none. People want to. Like, I've seen so many friends of mine, good dance teachers, and they want to train and they truly want to learn more. And there is just not enough channels to do that. So what we need to do, the Cubans, you know, is provide that. And it's not, I'm not saying Cubans. I'm saying because there are plenty of Afro-Cuban instructors who are in Cuba, and they are great. They are great Afro-Cuban instructors. So all of those professionals within the Afro-Cuban industry, you know, we need to be less critical of what's going on in the dance scene and stop criticizing the same way we don't want to be criticized, and just step out there and help with this training and provide more. That's, you know, because it's not their fault.
Well, that's your attitude in everything, I guess. No, isn't it the attitude you're saying? You are bringing people to Cuba to discover, to get in touch with people, mm-hmm. so they understand. You're saying that it's our responsibility to get out there and to show and to teach instead of criticizing. That's a fucking amazing attitude. It is.
Thank you.
It is. It should always be like that. I am so tired of people just criticizing. Do things.
Yes.
I want to do a podcast. I've been thinking about it. Let's do it.
Yes.
Just for the sake of doing it. Just for the sake for chatting with people like you that I wanted to chat, because I know you have a very rich background and I know you have tons of experience in dance. And to share it with other people, and I feel very strongly about that. Last one, I'll be sitting on and just saying, "Oh, this government, that." Let's do it. Let's bring people.
Yes.
And it is always, I think that road is so, it's so. That, the reason why people also don't want to do it is because it's fucking hard.
Yes,
it is hard to bring 10 people in Cuba.
Yes.
It's not easy, or else everybody's going to be traveling there like crazy. You know, that's why people just go to an agency and just buy a ticket and just go to a hotel. That's the easy route that I took many times. I'm not even criticizing that. But I think people like you are bringing it to the next level. And power to you. Oh, power to you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, Milena, so we did an hour. Huh? That was so fun. We traveled.
We traveled
verbally.
Yes.
That was so freaking cool. So if people want to continue the conversation with you or inquire about what you offer and to keep in touch with you also with the projects you do, how do they get in touch with you?
Yes. Well, one, I'm in social media. I'm there on Facebook, Milena Chaviano. The company also has its own page. It's Cuba Immersion. There is the website cubaimmersion.com, and they can also reach out to me through emails, either info@cubaimmersion.com or milena@cubaimmersion.com. So I'm out there. I love talking to people. I love communicating. So I always hope everybody feels comfortable of reaching out to me.
Bellissima. Perfect. Thank you very much for your time, Milena.
Thank you.
And we'll do this another time. Probably it'll be nice when COVID slows down.
Yes.
You know, we can actually talk about going to Cuba.
Yes. Yeah? Yes.
So
wouldn't that be nice?
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Milena.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.